This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The new movie Chicken Run is a satire of prisoner of war movies like The Great Escape and Stalag 17. But the prisoners are chickens, and the prison camp is a barbed wire British egg farm. My guests are the two animators who co-created and co-directed the film. Nick Park is a 3-time Academy Award winner who is best known for his animated film shorts starring the characters of Wallace and Gromit. Peter Lord is the co-founder and chairman of the Aardman Studio in England, which specializes in clay animation. Park has worked with Lord at Aardman since 1985. When Chicken Run begins, the chickens are feeling defeated because their attempts at escape have all been foiled. But the heroine hen of the movie, Ginger, refuses to give up. She pins her hopes on the know-how of a free-spirited American rooster who has accidentally wound up at the farm. The rooster, Rocky, is voiced by Mel Gibson. Escaping becomes a necessity when the mean-spirited woman who owns the egg farm decides it would be more lucrative if instead of selling eggs, she made chicken pot pies. So she gets a diabolical-looking pie machine and explains her plan to her nasty but dim-witted husband.
Ooh, that's champion, that is. What is it?
It's a pie machine, you idiot. Chickens go in, pies come out.
Ooh, what kind of pies?
Apple.
My favorite.
Chicken pies, you great lummox. Imagine it. In less than a fortnight, every grocer's in the county will be stocked with box upon box of Mrs. Tweedy's homemade chicken pies.
Just Mrs.?
Woman's touch makes the public feel more comfortable.
Oh, right. How does it work?
Get me a chicken and I'll show you.
Nick Park, when did you start making the connection between chicken farms and World War II prisoner of war camps?
Well, the idea goes back to about 1996, when Pete and I were sat around drinking coffee. We were trying to think up a good idea for a feature film. And it just struck us one day, and this drawing just seemed to appear in my sketchbook, which was a chicken digging its way with a spoon out of a chicken coop. And Pete and I just thought, what a great idea for a movie. You know, it's The Great Escape with chickens. If you look at a movie like The Great Escape, which Pete and I were brought up on, you know, it was on every holiday, you know, with The Sound of Music and The Wizard of Oz. And if you were so familiar with that world of cabins and fences and barbed wire, and if you take the people out and put chickens in, you've got a chicken coop, a regular chicken coop.
Peter, were there certain stock characters you knew you needed to have when she decided to make this movie?
Well, in a way, there were. Our first instinct was to think, so who do you have in prisoner of war movies and copy that? To be honest, we went away from that very much. I mean, we have now the two rats who are scroungers, a bit like James Garner in The Great Escape. They were sort of stock type. But the others, I think, actually owe more to perhaps Ealing comedies, perhaps to English comedy films, English sitcoms, if you like, in a general way, rather than being specifically prisoner of war stock types. I mean, we wanted, for our own amusement and for the delight of the audience, we wanted to refer to specifically to Steve McQueen in The Great Escape, but we don't have a Steve McQueen character. We actually have a number of characters playing parts of that role, playing around with that role. So we certainly weren't rigidly sticking to it. In fact, like Nick was saying, that was our funny idea. And when we went to Hollywood, that was our funny pitch. You know, we would sit down with the big executives and say, and here's the pitch, gentlemen. It's going to be The Great Escape, but with chickens. But ultimately, that isn't what we've done at all, actually. It's nothing like The Great Escape.
Did you visit chicken farms?
We did. We were going to spend, you know, 3 months living with chickens to, you know, to really do it right. But
this is the method approach to understanding chickens.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And we actually ended up spending a day on a chicken farm. And we took a video camera with us and really got down on our knees with the chickens just to see what life is like from a chicken's point of view.
What did you notice that surprised you when you got down to a chicken eye level?
Gosh, I mean,
well, they twitched a lot. You know, the thing about chickens, which we hadn't reckoned on, is that their heads twitch fiercely and convulsively the whole time. you know, and because their eyes are on the other side of their head, they're constantly moving their head around to see things. And we very rapidly reckoned this would make for a terrible movie because you couldn't have a tender love scene because the two protagonists, would instead of looking into each other's eyes, would be twitching their heads the whole time, you know, to look out of first one eye, then the other.
Yeah, in fact, we threw out, you know, what everybody knows as a chicken design quite early on in the film. So we had the knees bending the right way, and, you know, we gave them hands instead of wings, and, you know, generally improved, you know, what we know as a chicken.
Yeah.
Well, tell us what you did model the chickens on. The bodies, the heads, the eyes, mouth.
Well, you know, our chickens are such a daft group of characters that we wanted a lot of comedy out of them. And, you know, like the Wallace and Gromit films, we gave them big wide mouths with lots of teeth and eyes that are touching in the middle. And it gives them a very funny kind of, you know, goofy and often deadpan look, which we play off a lot in the movie. And their bodies, we wanted to get a lot of mileage out of them being this group of very unathletic, you know, unheroic group that have never really done anything or questioned anything in their lives, and pulling off this enormous stunt.
Now, how did you give each chicken a distinctive look so we can recognize one character from another?
That was a difficulty, actually, wasn't it? Because you go to a chicken farm and they all look the same. They're all either all brown or all white.
Yes. So we made that multicolored, didn't we? I mean, we have a rather nice color palette. You know, it's not too extreme. They're between very, very pale and sort of chestnut brown and red in between. But they're a very harmonious group. And then we had to muck around quite substantially. And those strange combs that chickens have on their heads became like hairdos. And we played around with those a lot. And then as a practical necessity of interest to people interested in the production, they had to have something around their necks, because their heads had to join their bodies, and the join was between one material and another. The heads were clay and the bodies were silicon. So they all ended up wearing necklaces and scarves and other strange things, which, frankly, chickens don't normally wear, to be honest. But the great joke is that none of the humans seem to notice this at all.
Well, Peter Lord, you co-founded Aardman Studios, the animation studio that this film comes out of, and you're chairman of that company. Describe the style of animation in your studio that's used in Chicken Run.
Yeah, okay. Well, people call it clay animation. In the States, they certainly do. In Britain, we refer to plasticine, which is the trade name for the clay that we use. And plasticine is a sort of modelling material that kids use at a very young age, like in kindergarten. A clay that never hardens, always stays flexible. And we discovered this material sort of 28 years ago, I believe it was, with my partner Dave Sproxton. We started experimenting in this form of animation. And what it is, how can I describe it? With plasticine animation, with puppet animation, you have a puppet on a stage in front of a camera, like a regular film studio, but instead of the camera running at real speed, it just takes one frame at a time. And each frame it takes is effectively 1/24th of a second of finished film. So the puppet sits there, you bend it, you take a frame. You bend it, you get out of the way, you take a frame. You come back, you bend it, you get out of the way, you take a frame. And in this agonizing manner, you slowly build up movement. And that's how the puppet moves. And that's the mechanics of what we do. And that's actually quite boring. You know, that's the mechanics. The interesting part, the exciting part, is how you take that puppet and make it not just move, but appear to live. You know, the whole thing, animation, that's what the word means. It means, you know, having life, giving life. And that's what we're always, always trying to do. And over the years, we've gradually specialized in character and in comedy, I suppose, those two things that we like to do. And I know lots of people, most animation, you might say, is about comedy. But for us, it's very important that the comedy that we do use and we do play with is derived from believable characters.
If you're just joining us, my guests are Nick Park and Peter Lord, co-directors of the new animated film Chicken Run, which is about chickens in an egg farm, trapped in an egg farm, kind of like it was a World War II prisoner of war movie. And Peter Lord founded the animation studio that made the movie. And Nick Park is very famous for his Wallace and Gromit animated films. Let's take a short break here, and then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. My guests are Peter Lord and Nick Park. They're co-directors of the new animated film Chicken Run, which is a comedy about chickens trapped in an egg farm surrounded by barbed wire, and it's played as if it were a World War II prisoner of war movie. And Nick Park also made the Wallace and Gromit animated short films, which have won several Academy Awards. Let's talk about facial expressions, because I think that's the most communicative part of a body and probably a very difficult thing to put across in the kind of animation that you do, but you both do it so well. Maybe you could describe a little bit how you would express an emotion in clay animation, like confusion. You know, take one of the chickens that had to be confused at some point.
If you were to see the whole head of Rocky, it's only 2 inches high, and the space above his eyeball, and that space is, I don't know what, you know, couple of millimeters, but and it's with that tiny space that we play, and you can obviously make the brow frown by bringing it down in the middle. You can make a quizzical look by raising one side and lowering the other, and you can then make the eyes suddenly sort of, as it were, pop out of the head, suddenly get very wide. So you're playing with this brow, which acts like eyebrows, the eyeballs and the eyelids, and you can use lids to blink in different ways and indicate, you know, I don't know, complacency, and make the eyes smile. But you're talking about a tiny little canvas. And really, if you do as we've often done, you watch actors, watch a live-action movie and turn down the sound and see how the face acts. And it's frighteningly minimalist, you know, but it's those little signals that real people can give off very easily because they're real. We're trying to give those same signals in our puppets.
So you do this a lot. You watch movies with the sound off and just study the face.
Well, for this film, to try and get these expressions we've talked about, in practice, we talked to the animators at huge length about what we wanted and about the motivation for this scene. And often, especially at the start of the shoot, Nick or I would end up rehearsing a gesture 30 times, just over and over again, to try and sort of somehow communicate it to the animator. And after a while, we thought, well, this is a mug's game. This is really slow. So we started to record ourselves on video. So that would be us with the sound down. We'd look at our own faces, mute, and see, you know, yes, how you talk about bewilderment. How does bewilderment show on the face? What are the brows doing? How wide are the eyes? How are the eyeballs shifting around? Because that's another great indicator. It's where the focus of the eyes is really crucial. Are they focused right on the person you're talking to? Are they drifting around the room looking at other details? You know, all this kind of thing.
You know, one of the things I really like about your animations is that let me just explain. You're working on this teeny tiny little set. You've got the clay figures that you're moving around in these small increments. And in the set with them, you have a mix of like little miniature objects you've designed, like little miniature like chairs and houses and beds and things like that. But there's also a few real things. Like, for instance, there's a scene where a chicken is trying to tunnel out of the chicken farm with a spoon. And I suspect that the spoon is real because it certainly looks real. And so you have this mix of something that is absolutely real and something that's absolutely fantasy inhabiting the same reality at the same time. And it makes for very interesting viewing.
Yeah. That's what we always find interesting about it, really.
That juxtaposition of the real and the imaginary?
Yeah.
In the same reality.
Yeah, because that's right. I mean, we are, what the world we've created is a strange sort of twilight world between kind of real live-action movie making, because you've got a 3D set, but in miniature. You can light it, do camera work, just as in any live-action action picture. At the same time, the characters, because they're made of clay, they can change shape and they can be very cartoony. And, you know, so we're always just travelling this very thin line between how real, how gritty, and how smooth and how soft is this world.
Because there's a huge difference as well, really fundamentally, between that room you've described. The bunk is made of wood, and you can see the texture of the wood. The bed has got straw in it, and you can see the texture of the straw. There's a piece of rusty old iron, you can see the rust. But then the chickens, our heroes, are these very, frankly, very cartoony constructs that look like clay. And intellectually, you'd never think that would work, I don't think. I think intellectually you'd say, that's crazy, that won't match, you know. But somehow it works, you know, supremely well, and you really believe the plasticine chickens in the real world. And that, again, that's just experience has proved that.
As we were describing, you work in these miniature sets for your animations. What does it do to your sense of size and proportion to spend your time in this teeny tiny miniature world?
Well, our sense of proportion went right out the window a long time ago. Otherwise, we'd be in some sensible occupation, I'm sure. I don't know. It's a very strange thing. For example, our chickens are 10 inches high, our model chickens, which is getting on for perhaps slightly more than half the size of a real chicken. So, relatively speaking, these are quite a big scale, because we're working to a half-scale thing. Imagine a chicken 10 inches high. Imagine a human comes into shot. The human ought to be, by that reckoning, about 3.5 feet high. And it's virtually impossible, and certainly agonizingly horrible, to work with an animated puppet 3.5 feet high, because animation ought to be hands-on and light and instinctive. And if the puppet's that high, you end up struggling with this massive engineering beast. It's really hard to bend. So we didn't do that. We made humans that were only 12 or 14 inches high, and miniature chickens, extra small chickens to go with the humans. So we ended up on two scales, which was one of the many things we stupidly didn't see coming when we stupidly decided to make a film about chickens, which we regard as our first mistake.
It's so funny that you're doing this very sophisticated kind of animation with this kind of comparatively unsophisticated style of animation, really literally moving around clay puppets. At the same time, that the big animation is the computer animation that everybody seems to be using now. Do you feel like you're living in another world than the computer animated people? Do you feel like you're in just another dimension altogether?
People often ask us about this, understandably, because with dinosaurs out right now, computer animation is very visible. And I mean, our attitude is always very simply, well, why can't the two coexist? You know, why on earth should the new technology push out the old if the old works? You know, why should a synthesized instrument replace an acoustic instrument? Why should it? No, it obviously, evidently shouldn't. The two, in a sensible, sane world, the two will coexist. So I hope that will always be the case. Having said that, it is kind of ridiculous. I mean, our technology is quite so old-fashioned, you know. But heaven knows it works. And also, you know, because it's hands-on, which it is, because it is, it consists of animators in studios handling clay models, and because also, strangely enough, strangely to your listeners, it's like a live performance. And that may sound crazy, because everyone always talked about, you know, the words agonizing and painstaking are always on our lips. It is a slow process, but it's a live process, because you've got your puppet, and your puppet is going to walk across the set from point A to point B. When that puppet sets off in the morning, you have no real way of knowing where it's going to go to. You know, you guess, of course, you approximate, you rehearse, but you don't know exactly. And when you're halfway across the set, you still don't know precisely where you're going, and you don't know, and you certainly can't go back, just as in real life. You know, you're a performer on the stage, you start the performance, you don't know exactly where you're going, and you sure as hell can't change what you've already done. And in that sense, what we do is live, whereas computer animation and conventional cell animation isn't like that, because you can do the last drawing at the same time as the first drawing and then fill in the spaces in between. Or, if it's not going well, you can easily revise it. We can't easily revise what we do. The only thing we can do is shoot it again.
Yeah. Peter Lord and Nick Park co-directed the new animated film Chicken Run. They'll be back in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. Here's the theme from The Great Escape.